12. Wolf sick. That same evening, a letter arrived at the Langham Hotel and was slid under the door of room 443. Octavia Milkweed frowned, set her ragged copy of Frankenstein on the reading table, and retrieved the missive. She read it, committed its contents to memory, then lit it with the candle and let it burn in the brass sink. She turned on the taps and washed the ashes down the drain. She scrubbed the rouge from her cheeks, changed into shabby grey clothes, and put her hair in a plain bonnet. If she were to be seen in the hotel dressed in this fashion, a porter would toss her into the gutter. She pushed aside the thick curtains, opened the window, looked around, and stepped out onto the small faux balcony. Her fourth-floor room wasn't a wise choice for this part of her employment, but at least it faced Bond Street, which wasn't half as busy as Regent, especially now that most of the clerks had gone home. She climbed down easily and dropped to the ground. As she walked along Bond Street, she examined the letter in her mind's eye. It was all quite straightforward. She imagined similar letters being sent to agents throughout the city, throughout England, in fact, and other parts of the world. Each cog assigned its task. It was boggling to think of the size of the organization. Or perhaps she was the only agent out on this particular night. No, that at least wasn't true. She guessed that Mr. Wellington, unwittingly, was doing their bidding as well. Her thoughts had turned to him several times during the course of the day. His voice had sounded youthful, which meant he could be her age. She had only ever met two other agents, and they had been pudgy old spiders. Mr. Wellington had spoken in lower tones, and there was a softness in his voice that had touched her. And he didn't sound bitter. She wondered what he looked like. She pictured him with mutton chops and laughed. No, that's what sailors and old men wore. But maybe well-trimmed hair with a bit of a curl and a straight, narrow nose. When Octavia had been a child in the orphanage, she had often dreamed a man would come to rescue her. He would say, "I'm your father, and my ship was wrecked. That is why you are here in the orphanage. Now I can take you home." Or he would be a rich uncle. As she grew older, she hoped it would be a young prince, and she pictured him so frequently that she could actually see his face. In the end, no one came. So one day she left on her own and began her life as a pickpocket. She couldn't help imagining Mr. W. as the young prince she'd dreamed about as a child. "You're being a bufflehead, Octavia," she laughed. Mr. Wellington might well be as ugly as old Taff, who had taught her how to survive on the streets. Besides, there had been one prince in her life already, Garrett, Taff's adopted son. He'd been the closest she'd had to a big brother, but thinking of him saddened her. So she let the image of his dark hair and eyes go. She approached the Breckham Moral and Industrial School, an old jailhouse that had been converted into an orphanage and training school. The sight of it reminded her of Lady Cotterill's orphanage, where they had attempted to shape her one smack of the rod at a time. She'd hated them. They'd hated her. But never mind. She was now dressed as a charwoman, in the employ of an imaginary lady. And this was not Lady Cotterill's. This school was doing good work, training young abandoned girls and sending them to Canada or Australia to work. She banged a knocker, and the clang echoed in the night. Soft footsteps approached on the other side of the door. It opened, and a young girl in a black dress squinted at her. "What ye be here for?" she muttered. Before Octavia could answer, a broom appeared from behind the door and swatted the girl across the head. From the shadows of the hall, a ragged, tired voice admonished, "You say good evening when you open the door after 6 o'clock in the evening. That is the proper greeting. How many times must I repeat it?" A hand pinched the ear of the cowering girl and yanked her away from the door. "Get to your bed." The orphan ran off down the hall, holding her ear and sobbing. An old woman in a brown dress stepped out of the shadows. "Good evening. How may I be of assistance?" The stink of boiled cabbage emanated from the house, or from the woman, a smell Octavia hated. Cabbage was all they had served for breakfast, lunch, and dinner at Lady Cotterill's. "Are you the governess?"
"Yes. It is 9:30 bells. Most of the house is in bed."
"I am here to inquire about a prospect for Lady Mordray. I did not question my lady's orders."
"Ah, well, you are a good, obedient sort, then," she said, turning her head so her voice carried down the hall. "Unlike some in this house."
The woman reminded Octavia a little of Lady Cotterill. A few short years ago, Octavia had been very much like the girl who had answered the door. For a moment, her heart ached.
"So, which prospect are you inquiring about?"
"My lady says she wants to know about Esther McGravin."
The woman lifted one eyebrow, then licked her lips, exposing a set of false wooden teeth.
"Esther has taken ill."
"Ill? My lady will not be pleased to hear that. She needs a replacement immediately."
"I have other prospects, much further along in their training."
"My lady insisted on Esther McGravin. What illness does the child have?"
"A fever. She will no doubt be healthy in a few days. Next time you inquire, please come during the day. It would be more convenient."
Octavia nodded.
"I will report to Lady Mordray, and return when she sends me."
The old governess closed the door with a thud, and Octavia walked back to the street, mulling over her orders. The letter had clearly stated that she must immediately see this Esther McGravin face to face, and note her condition, including, of all things, the appearance of her shoulders. The only details about Esther that Octavia had been given were that her hair was red and she was 10 years old. Octavia walked to the end of the block, then looked around to be sure no one was watching. She turned a corner and found an alley that led to the back of the school. She hid near a bush. Normally, Octavia would observe a house for days before breaking into it, getting to know the patterns of the people who lived there. Old Taff had taught her that. But she didn't have 2 days. Only one light burned in the building, near the front, so she chose a main floor window at the back. She crept to it and pulled hard on its frame. It opened to one side with a squeak. She poked her head inside and listened. Snoring, a few deep breaths, more snoring. The dull moonlight glinted off a metal bed. Octavia climbed quietly onto the sill, then slowly lowered her feet to the floor and waited for her eyes to adjust. Soon she could make out 3 beds containing 3 girls each, packed in together like sausages. No need to buy another bed if you can fit them all in one. She remembered those days far too well. 1 girl snored loudly. Octavia was thankful for that. It would help cover up any noise she made. She crept across the complaining hardwood floor to the door and opened it, peering into the hall.
"What's you want here?"
a tiny voice asked from inside the room. Octavia froze.
Miss, what's you want here?"
The girl who had opened the door to Octavia sat up in bed, rubbing her eyes.
"I'm doing an inspection,"
Octavia whispered, crossing the floor back to the girl's bedside.
"Go to sleep." "Can't sleep. Ear hurts. What are you inspecting for?" "I've come to see Esther McGravin."
The girl frowned.
"Esther? Why?" "She's me mate."
Octavia slipped easily into her former dialect. The girl blinked.
"Your mate? And you want her out of here before she's shipped to Australia or worse? Rather. Do you know where they've stowed her?" "Esther is wolf sick."
The girl said this as though it completely answered the question.
"Wolf sick?" "Yes. She howls and barks. She went out to get eggs. Was gone a fortnight. When she comes back, she's all hairy. She's wolf sick. I'd still like to know where me mate is. We've been friends for a long time. In the cellar, where the bad girls go. How do I get there? I'll show you."
The girl brushed past Octavia and tiptoed down the hallway. Octavia checked both ways, then followed. They took 1 turn, then another, and finally the girl stopped at a wood slat door that came to a point at the top.
"I ain't going down there with you."
Octavia leaned over and gave her a kiss on the forehead.
"What's that for?" "Thank you. You should go get your 40 winks now."
But the girl stayed and watched, as Octavia heaved open the large door and felt her way down the stairs. The room was dank and clouded with a smell so sour it forced her to pinch her nose. Perhaps it had been a cesspool before the sewers were built under London. In a corner on the far side of the room, a blue ghostly light shone from behind a black curtain. Between Octavia and the curtain, she could make out broken chairs, old clothing, a pile of coal, and pots and pans. The floor of the cellar was earthy and damp. She would slip if she wasn't careful. She picked her way gingerly over a pile of bricks and through other rubbish until she reached the curtain. She pulled it back and gasped. There, on a thick oak table, chained by her legs and arms, was a young girl with red hair. Esther. The oil lamp hanging from the ceiling threw so many shadows that, at first glance, she looked like a normal child. But as Octavia's eyes focused in the dimness, she realized that Esther's face was unnaturally elongated, her nose flat and wide, and clumps of her hair had fallen out and lay around her on the table. Her muscular arms and legs were covered with reddish fuzz. She wore leggings that were in tatters, as though she'd crawled over sharp stones, and her dirty feet were malformed. Wolfsick. Now she understood what the little girl meant. Octavia committed every detail to memory, just as the letter had instructed, including a careful inspection of Esther's shoulders. Sure enough, there was something odd about them. She inched closer. One large, shiny iron bolt stuck out of the top of each shoulder, piercing the girl's clothing and reaching almost to her ears. Octavia pulled at the slit in Esther's dress fabric to reveal fresh stitches etched on either side of the bolts. Octavia's stomach began to heave. She'd seen many gruesome sights in her short life, but this set her back on her heels. Who would do this to a little girl? The governess? Was she conducting some sort of horrible experiment? If she was, then she had important friends, for this required a surgeon. Octavia had heard rumours of street urchins disappearing. Perhaps the governess was somehow involved. Or perhaps she had found Esther in this wolf-sick state and didn't want to lose her investment, so she chained her down here, hoping the sickness would run its course and Esther could return to her normal life in the orphanage. But what on earth were the shoulder bolts for? Esther lay still as death. Octavia slowly reached out and touched a bolt. The metal was cold. Esther moaned, a low ululation. Octavia noticed marks on her legs and arms from the shackles, scabs, and weeping sores. She must have been lying here a few days. Octavia considered trying to wake the girl, but all the letter had asked for was her observations. Just as she took a step to leave, the girl's eyes popped open. She glanced frantically around until she saw Octavia.
Who are you?
She rasped.
I'm a mate. Arms hurt. Free me.
The orders had said to observe her, nothing else. Well, I can observe her as she goes to the doctor, Octavia thought. The hospital for children wasn't that far away, and she had enough money for a cab. That wouldn't really be disobeying orders.
Me hurt. Me do,
Esther whispered.
Must go back to Orlando.
Orlando? Where is that?
Home. Safe. Drink.
She was mad as a hatter. The doctors would figure it out. On a hunch, Octavia searched several cluttered tables, pushing aside nails, a broken doll, and clay pieces, until she found a key. She plunged it into the lock on the left ankle manacle, and it turned. Esther moved her leg ever so slightly. It took a minute to release the remaining manacles. Esther rolled over and moaned. It would be near impossible to carry her out, given her weakened state. She'd be dead weight.
I'll help you, Octavia said,
feeling she had no choice but to try.
There's a hospital nearby. Put your arm over my shoulder.
With surprising strength and speed, the girl planted both feet on the ground and shoved Octavia.
No, touch me. So says the voice.
Octavia rubbed her head as she climbed to her feet, surprised to find herself halfway across the room. She moved to grab hold of Esther, but before she could do so, Esther head-butted her in the ribcage, and Octavia fell to the floor again. Footsteps pounded upstairs, followed by a yell. The governess was awake. Esther shook her head, squeezing her temples.
The voices must go back to Orlando.
Then she was charging up the stairs. A child screamed, and Octavia remembered the little girl she'd left on the landing. She took the stairs three at a time and found the girl in a trembling heap on the floor, surrounded by shattered glass. The window above her was broken, curtains flapping in the breeze.
Don't move,
Octavia insisted.
You'll cut your feet. What's going on?
The silhouette of the governess appeared at the far end of the hall. Octavia patted the girl's head, then followed Esther out of the broken window.